G'day, this is Tom Uren of Seriously Risky Business, and I'm here today with the Gruck.
Hiya, g'day.
I'd like to thank the Cyber Initiative at the Hewlett Foundation for their support and also founding corporate sponsor Proofpoint. And today we've got great news. Apparently ransomware's days are numbered. Why do you think that is, Gruck?
Okay, so what I think we're seeing in the cybercrime space is ransomware is sort of, I think it's not necessarily hitting diminishing returns, but it's probably peaked. It's unlikely to go much, much bigger in the returns. And at the same time, it's facing a huge amount of friction and problems. So, you know, you've got ASD coming out saying that they're going to hunt cyber criminals. You've got Cybercom, who are fairly aggressive now, and it looks like they're going to be going after criminals if they aren't already. The UK has said that most of their COBRA meetings, their sort of crisis meetings, are about ransomware. There's a lot more aggressive state action starting against ransomware, which I think on its own, it wouldn't necessarily be fatal, but if you look at alternative cybercrime opportunities, back the business
email compromise.
Right. So if you look at back business email compromise, it generates more money than ransomware. It has less infrastructure costs, and no one is talking about it. And I think the issue here is that extortion and disruption is the real problem, right? It's the disruption, the interference, and people feel compelled and upset to be extorted. Being defrauded, they feel embarrassed, right?
Yeah, so business email compromise, it's just basically you ask someone to pay you money and they pay you. And you just have to ask in the right way, and like by making your invoice look legit.
Right.
Or maybe you change an invoice's bank details or something like that. So I guess there's different variations, but they're, mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. They're hell of a lot less disruptive than ransomware.
Right. So I don't think that they will rise to the same, like you're not going to have cabinet meetings about people sending emails asking for money. Right. You can if the NHS gets locked up because, you know, WannaCry, for example. But, you know, you're not going to get that with Beck. It's just not going to get the same sort of pushback at the state level. So I think that the opportunity is better in terms of revenue generation. The friction from state response is a lot lower. The costs are a lot lower. You don't need ransomware development. You don't need exploit. You don't need, you know, access agents. You don't need all of this other infrastructure for crime. You just need emails and maybe a Photoshop guy or something. So it's just a lot easier and it pays better and it doesn't have any pushback. To me, oh, and it's not in Bitcoin either. It's in cash money, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're not even tied to volatility.
That's one of the avenues that it seems like governments are making some progress on is putting pressure on cryptocurrency exchanges to do more know your customer and sort of anti-money laundering things that make it harder for crooks to get cryptocurrency out. But now, this is not to disagree with you. Well, it is to disagree with you. All those things are true already, right? And yet ransomware has continued to grow over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And it makes me think that the kind of people who do ransomware are different from the kind of people who do Beck. So one of my favorite stories about business email compromise is this Lithuanian guy who did open source research, found that some of the big tech companies in Silicon Valley were using a Taiwanese computer manufacturer to get servers. And so he just replicated their invoices. And I think he managed to get 50 or 100 million US dollars. I think it's like the case of the dog who caught the car.
Right.
And I think there's a scale where it does become a serious problem, right? If you steal $50 million, people do come after you. And I remember hearing Alex Stamos, who was Facebook CISO at the time, saying that it was like a big deal. But that guy, he doesn't have the same capabilities as Eastern European unemployed computer scientists.
Yeah, so I know there have been shifts in cybercrime before, and it's, I'm not suggesting that they're fads, but they're sort of like these guys will have debates internally about what is going to be the best way to make money, right? So for a while, not quite 10 years ago, but ransomware was a thing that individuals dealt with, right? Mm-hmm. We used to call, it was only when they started going after companies that it became like big game hunting and it was a bit special. And now ransomware against individuals is unheard of. They're not going to go for your $600 when they could get $6 million or $600,000 or whatever from an actual company. But at the same time that they were still doing this $600 thing, they were also going after crypto mining. And this was, again, when crypto wasn't as valuable as it is now. And there was a big discussion at the time between, is ransomwaring someone's computer for, you know, an 80% chance at a $500 payoff the better idea than crypto mining for a much longer period of time with an unlimited amount of money in theory? And they do have these discussions and debates, but they're not building Excel spreadsheets and doing projections and like trying to figure it out. It's a lot more like
justifying their business case.
right. Like they're not making proposals and, to the regional manager of cybercrime. Yuri, I've got that presentation you asked me for. You can see I'm projecting, explosive growth in the crypto mining sphere. they don't do that, but they do look at like, well, my friend was doing it and he has made, $20,000 in the last day and we haven't made nothing over here. So clearly I want to do what he's doing instead and make some money.
Yeah. I guess the way I describe that is that there's maybe a loose community and they kind of experiment as a community, not as a community, but individuals experiment. But they talk enough that somebody has success, that knowledge disperses and other people pick it up, right?
Right. And by the way, this is one of the things that I think is so excellent for Russia in terms of their cyber capability is that by creating not only just a space with freedom to fail, you sort of allow people to develop skills, but there's also a vibrant competition, this marketplace of ideas and technologies and stuff like that. And anything that is successful gets dispersed and disseminated to other people. And it allows, there's a little bit of path dependence, but it allows for quite a lot of freedom of innovation. And it rewards people who are creative and come up with new ways of generating money. But it doesn't allow them to sort of rest on their laurels because it will disperse to everyone else. And then, someone else is going to have to innovate again.
And yeah, I think you said earlier you didn't, you were talking about this and you said it was not exactly fads. And I didn't mention it at the time, but I thought it was more like an evolution and kind of there's a response and a response to the way that people try and defend themselves, I guess. So your argument is that the ransomware is disruptive enough that the response from both states and also from victim organizations is strong enough that they'll need to do something else.
Not that they will need to, but that they will look at, I can do this thing that is difficult in terms of its requirements, that it, I need to have exploits, I need to gain access, I need to have the software, it needs to defeat, antivirus, I need to hunt throughout the entire network and get everything. I need to then discuss and negotiate and bully them into paying me, over several days. Then I need to cash out my Bitcoin and convert that into cash money. And I need to involve a whole bunch of other people. Or I can send an email and get more money.
Yep.
And I think that it's going to be that you can do all of this stuff and it's going to bring more problems for you. And so I don't think the days are numbered in that like it's going to collapse and there's just not going to be any more. I think that the incentives are not there in the same way that they are for Beck. And I think that that means that Beck will basically be stealing people away from ransomware.
Like,
Yeah. So I think in terms of just the growth for Beck is there, and it's not there for ransomware.
Right. So there's an incentive for people to follow the money, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
And like I said, my immediate thought was there's some people, I think, who just enjoy the challenge of that kind of ransomware.
So I think you're right. I think that there's another thing in that a lot of these guys, they try and, like, they're nerds, and they try and style themselves on sort of mafia, the Russian mafia, or like the Russian criminals, you know, thieves by law. These, like, this professional criminal class. Right, and they're not. They're not professional criminals, right? Like they don't. they're not from that lifestyle, but they like to emulate it. Just like there might be people who like to emulate The Godfather or something like that. It's an affect, but it's also, you see it in the things that they set up. The Eastern European Mafia Association, right? Like they like the idea of being.
Yeah.
Criminals, like it's got a bit of a cachet to it.
Yeah, and I was wondering if
I don't think you get that with emails.
Yeah, that's where I was going. I wonder if it's kind of a lower status thing. So even though it's easier and there's more money and there's less risk, there's also less status.
And yeah. So the thing there, which I think is it might be worth bringing up, is that, you know, mafias face those same sort of pressures, right? They can be like, we're used to extorting people and, you know, we're thieves, we rob stuff, we sell stolen goods, we extort from local business owners, but all the money is in selling heroin, right? Except, you know, we're not allowed to sell heroin. So what we do is we sell heroin quietly and we do, you know, less of the other stuff, you know, just enough for appearance's sake, but really, you know, the money is elsewhere. So I wonder if there might be that where, you know, you keep up some amount of ransomware just so you can continue to say, like, well, I'm not sending email for money. I mean, come on, that's pathetic. I mean, not much anyway. I mean, but not
I
most.
Mean, I wonder how much status you actually get if mostly you can't, I mean, do they talk to each other about it? I guess they do online, like they have an online persona, but what about in real life? It's like...
Yeah,
but your neighbor's not going to think less of you because you're. I presume. I don't know.
Yeah, you rock up to the club in your Ferrari and, you know, step out and you've got all your really expensive Adidas tracksuit and everyone's like, that's the guy that sends email. What a loser. I don't know if they're going to follow, you know, market pressure because the market doesn't need to be rational, as we know. But it does seem to me that the incentives are lined up against ransomware and for Beck. And it just, you know, there's a lot of reasons that doesn't necessarily need to happen. But I think money is a powerful motivator.
Yes, I agree. So the other thing I mentioned before is that one of the news items this week is that there's a paper out in Science magazine about an AI that can actually play the board game. I think it's a board game. I've never played it. Diplomacy, where the goal is to take over the world and you have to both do stuff, but you also have to talk and try and negotiate with other players. So that AI is good enough to have sort of strategic intent and tie that to conversations it's having with different people. And it occurred to me that this is, I've kind of been skeptical about the role of AI in cybersecurity, but this actually seemed like a case where if you could take the same kind of technology, you could use it to either fish people or for Beck. And perhaps this is the bad part of this conversation where everything goes to crap again, but that seems like a technical role is kind of training those machines so that they actually are effective at sort of automatically doing Beck or phishing, and that may be the role for the ex-ransomware type person.
Yeah, you know, there you go. You can be like, what do? You develop malware? You know, I develop AI, you know, pipelines for, you know, producing effective phishing emails for Beck. But I think that that's actually a good point, right? So those AI writing bots, you know, GPT-3, there's commercial ones as well. And they're crap for certain types of writing, but very good for generic business email. If you want to just write a, you know, it's a, you know, pleasure doing business with you, please find attached, you know, invoice, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's the sort of thing these things crank out without any problem, right?
Yeah, they are, it seems that the bar for that type of communication is quite low.
Yeah, and even today, I think that there's absolutely no reason for a phishing email or for a back email to have any grammatical or spelling errors. That you should be able to basically give an outline of what you want, put it into... Well,
I guess if they just use Grammarly.
Right. Well, no, you can put it into Grammarly. Quillbot will do paraphrasing for you and make it sound nice and more formal or whatever. Basically, it's there already. The technology is there already. You know, this diplomacy playing thing, which will be able to do strategies and actually interact with people over time. There's deep fakes, which mean that your voice can be changed to match someone already. Your face can be changed to match a corporate officer if you're doing that. You know, I think the technology that is not there for, say, automatically detecting attacks and building defenses is absolutely there for streamlining attacks to fool humans, because this is the thing. Like, the only thing defending you is the Turing test. And as we know, humans are terrible at telling the difference between AI-generated garbage and regular business speak-generated garbage.
So the deepfake I saw most recently was of Sam Bankman-Fried, who's the, I guess at this point, he's probably disgraced former CEO of a crypto exchange. And that was, like, not bad. It wasn't fantastic, but I imagine would do well enough for people desperate because they've lost money and are not thinking quite straight and not being very skeptical.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. I think that one of the things that makes these frauds easier is that you put a little bit of pressure on people so that they don't have the time to sit back and go, like, is it plausible that the CFO is calling me from his Bahama vacation and he needs me to wire him $20,000 right now to his Russian his Russian bank account, you know? If you think about that stuff, it obviously falls apart. But on the other hand, if you're like, oh my God, you know, pressure, I got to do something now, that's where it works. And so that's also, I think, where the flaws that we can see with AI cease to be relevant. That, you know, you can say, well, if you're paying attention and you look closely, it's clearly a little bit too stiff, or it goes through like a loop of whatever. But those things are not meant to be used against people who are paying attention and who are observing closely and are being skeptical and whatever. It's meant to be used against people who are slightly vulnerable.
Right. And you don't need it to work every time, right?
Right.
And the whole point of having a machine be able to do it is that you can do it against a lot more people and find those ones that are susceptible. One theory I read a long time ago was that there's actually a purpose to spam being badly written.
Right.
And the purpose is it selects for people who are not very skeptical. So rather than being a telltale sign, it's actually a filter.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a Microsoft paper, and it certainly makes a lot of sense. That sort of scam these days is done with phone calls, where there's a lot of, you know, your computer is infected, you know, call our help center and stuff. Or they'd be watching this YouTube channel where this guy basically keeps him on the phone for hours and hours and hours. Like, where he's just, so basically what they do is they offer him a refund, then they have him install a remote PC thing, they have him log into his bank account, then they edit his bank account thing to say that they've transferred $3,000 instead of $300. And then they're like, oh no. And it's literally, they just pop up the HTML and they edit it. They're like, we've sent you $3,000. You need to send us that money back.
Yeah. You know? Oh, okay. Right.
So, right, we've accidentally sent you too much money. Go and buy some gift cards at $500 each, and then give us the numbers so that I don't get fired for my mistake. That's the right. So that's the scam. The whole thing is about putting pressure on people for this thing. Right, I'm going to get fired. You have to do this. I'm saying on the phone. Blah 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 blah. sort of never giving them time to think. And it's done with these Indian call centers. That's the sort of thing that you can now automate, I think. Maybe not today, but very soon. Like, so much of that seems like chatbot level interactions. And it's just, it can be done with a deep fake for so much, just to filter you down until you get to the point where, like, there's a customer service representatives to just bring someone in, all that stuff.
Yeah, so some of those call centers use, I think they're called soundboards, and the operators have phrases built into the soundboard, and they can actually run three or four conversations at the same time, and they just basically press the button. And so I guess moving to an AI would be just removing the person, and instead of doing three or four at once, you can do hundreds. And if you've got a kind of script where you just run through that script, probably for many people, it doesn't really matter what you say. They're not going to believe you.
Right.
Probably for some small percentage, you're always going to have success, because they're just susceptible or vulnerable for whatever reason.
Right. And that's also a thing with the sort of high-pressure sales stuff, is that you will have a junior salesperson at the beginning just to sort of filter out people who are time wasters, who are not going to go very far, and they'll try and hook people and get them in. And once someone has gone past a certain point, then you have to bring in the senior sales guy to close the deal. Someone who's going to know, like, all the tricks. And I think, you know, with that soundboard stuff, as you were talking about, what it means is that you can replace the entry-level hook with automation. And it might be that you can have one person plus an AI plus a soundboard managing 50 people rather than three during all these conversations. And then when it gets to a certain point, you hand it off to, you know, the senior professional just to close the deal.
Yeah, I've got a friend here who, when he gets those calls, he'll just keep talking to them, like, forever. And it never goes anywhere. He'll be like, so you want me to turn on my computer? Let me go turn it on. Then he'll come back a few minutes later and say, so I've turned it off now. And it's just a total time suck for them. And eventually they hang up, and sometimes they'll ring back and just abuse him because they've wasted. So my idea for a counter defense is just to have a system which will answer those phone calls and just go nowhere. Fire with fire. We need to start a business, Gruck.
So that actually happened to me. So, like, I speak Thai, but not at a professional level. Like, I don't do well if you're like, you know, sir, I'm phoning in regards to the blah, blah, blah. Like, I get lost. So I got called up by this, a scam center, and the guy starts talking to me, and he's using one of the names that I use over here. And he's going on, and he says something about a bank, and I'm like, okay. And so he goes on and on. He's like, you know, blah, 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 the bank officer, blah, 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 you know. And I'm like, I know. And then he goes on for a little while, and I realize, okay, like, this has gone on really long, and I don't know what he's talking about. So I'm like, I don't understand. And so he sort of loops and does it again. And it happens, you know, a little like, you know, blah, 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 do you understand? Yes, I understand. Blah, 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 okay. Yes, okay. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, no, this is going on too long. I'm distressed. I don't understand. A few minutes into the conversation, I realize that my bank never uses that name, right? They use the name I have in my passport. So I twig, this is not legitimate. So I keep doing the same thing I've been doing anyway, but now I know that I'm just wasting his time. And, you know, a lot of it for me is what I'm saying, I don't understand. What I mean literally is, the words that you are speaking are not words that I understand. Like, I do not. But for him, right, he's running the scam where he's trying to say, like, the bank officer has misallocated, returning interests from blah, 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 and we need to, like, reproportion and adjust your account. So, like, you know, he's trying to, like, work some scam about, you know, like, a thing. And he thinks that I don't understand the complexities of the scam. Like, that I'm too dumb to understand what he's trying to tell me, as opposed to I don't know the words he is saying.
Yeah, you kept him on tenterhooks. Like, I've got a potential win here. If only he wasn't so dumb.
Yes. I don't understand. Like, who let a 5-year-old answer the phone, goddammit?
So I think this has been pretty positive, Grok. We've decided that ransomware's days are numbered. Beck's going to get a lot worse, but we figured out the solution as well. Thanks a lot.
There we go. That's it.